Welcome to the Beef Watch Podcast. I'm Aaron Berger, a Nebraska Extension educator. For today's Beef Watch Podcast, we're going to discuss the topic of corn residue grazing. To have a conversation about this, I'm joined today by Dr. Barry Janowski, who's a Nebraska Extension Beef Systems Specialist. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here and get to talk about corn residue.
Well, I'm really excited to have you on today because, in my opinion, corn residue grazing in Nebraska is one of our competitive advantages. When I look at the amount of irrigated corn and dryland corn acres across the state, what we're able to do with that, I just think it provides a tremendous opportunity for beef cattle producers in this state. And you've done a lot of research in this area, a lot of groundbreaking research, in my opinion. And so I'm excited to just have a conversation about how this resource can be effectively utilized by cattle producers. Let's start with the fundamentals first. As we're thinking about corn residue grazing, what are some things we need to know about the residue that's out there and how much we can graze with cattle?
Yeah, so the first thing to understand when we're talking about corn residue grazing is that we are really wanting to use the best and leave the rest. So what are we talking about the best? Of course, down corn, which we could have a whole conversation about. But in normal situations, we're really talking about the husk and the leaf. And the husk and the leaf make up about 40% of the residue that is in the field, with the stalk and the cob making up the other like 60%. So right away, we're only going to be focused on that 40%. And then within that, we have to recognize the husk has the most energy. It is the most energy dense component in terms of true residue that is out there. And so that's mostly what we are trying to target utilization of, and the cattle select the husk. So what we're really thinking about is utilizing the husk and the leaf, and there's going to be some loss of those during the grazing season. They're going to trample some of it in, wind's going to take some of it off. So typically we suggest targeting 50% of that 40. And when we talk about 50% of that 40, that means that we are really removing about 15 to 20% of the residue in the field. So when we've grazed a target in a year where the ground is frozen, it's kind of hard to even tell they have grazed. That would be the target, if that makes sense. Where you can see the differences is it'll be hard to find any husk that's left out in the field. So husk is a great indicator of when it's time to move. When it's hard to find husk, it's time to start thinking about moving. So what does that look like? Well, it does depend. And we do see that the amount of residue in the field is correlated with the yield of corn. So higher yielding fields have more residue than lower yielding fields. Now, that relationship isn't exactly the same in that in a lower yielding field, there's more residue relative to yield than in a higher yielding field. But on average, a good place, it's a rule of thumb to start with, is to think for every 100 bushels, we can graze one cow for 1 month. In higher yielding fields, it's a little bit lower than that. We'd probably actually shoot for more like 25 to 28 days. In the lower yielding fields, that month really tends to work out, but it does depend on the weather. You can have years where you either had really high wind loss of your husk, or you got a really wet period when the ground wasn't frozen and they trampled a lot in, and you should go down from there. So I kind of think about that one cow for 1 month for every 100 bushels is like, here's the maximum target, and then go down from there, depending on what the weather does.
You mentioned early on that we are going to see cows focus on picking up the leaf and husk first, but there are scenarios, and we've got some this year, where there's downed corn. Obviously, cows are going to go seek that out first. What's the level of corn that's out in a field where we need to be cautious about managing those cows, adjusting them to the corn so we reduce the risk of acidosis?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we say when you get 10 bushels an acre out there, you need to do something to manage intake. I would say that even at 7 or 8 bushels, think about how much is there. So 10 bushels is 560 pounds of corn grain per acre. If I put a group of cows out onto, let's say, an 80-acre field, or maybe let's do easy math, a 100-acre field, and I have 10 bushels, I mean, think about how much corn they can go and select. They can go and select nothing but a diet of corn. And cows who have been out grazing residue before automatically know, and they start selecting that. And so right away, you can run into acidosis really quick. So I actually get kind of nervous at 7 or 8, but definitely by 10, you better do something. So what's the something that you can do? The first thing, and probably honestly, the best thing you could do would be to do something where you're actually strip grazing it. So you're giving them limited access to that corn. And that allows you to actually get the rumen adapted to the corn, but also just thinking about what do those cows need. You don't want to have acidosis, because there's really good data that shows that cows that experience acidosis, it negatively impacts the rumen wall itself, and so their productivity and their longevity is decreased significantly if they go through a bout of acidosis. So it's a long-term game. It's not the short-term, oh, I lost some cows, but you're going to have cows that have long-term effects on. So that's something we want to avoid. So what do we do? Well, like I said, strip grazing can help at a very, very minimum. At least adapting them to corn and getting that rumen used to corn so that you have the right bacteria in the rumen, just like you're thinking about adapting cattle to a feedlot diet. So starting to feed those cows corn before you go out and get them up to about 10 pounds a day before you go out is also an option. I still think allocation is your friend. And frankly, this year, looking at calf prices and that type of thing, or even cull cow prices, you might think about using that field differently. Like, instead of using it for my spring calving cows, maybe I put cull cows out there. Maybe I put growing calves out there and I feed them a little bit of protein. Again, I still need to adapt them to the corn, but there's some benefits of actually getting paid for that feed value, right? Now I can sell them off and end up getting paid for the game, because you really got something that's actually quite high value, if that makes sense. So you can think about it as a waste. I have this down corner. You can think about it as an opportunity.
You mentioned going out and saying, there's 10 bushels of corn out here. How do we actually calculate that? How do we measure how much corn grain is on the ground?
Yeah, so the easiest thing to do is actually, the nice thing is, most corn is planted on 30-inch rows, right? So 2.5 feet, and so we can actually count the amount of ears in a row. We can actually calculate how much ears are out there. One of the key things about doing that is that you want to go kind of across the field. You want to make sure you get a good subsample, because you'll have probably some problem areas, especially this year, where some of the reasons why we have down corn is the straight line winds, for instance. And so some places will be more affected than others. And so you want to make sure that you actually have an idea of, what do my hot spots look like, so to speak. So when we think about counting the amount of ears in a row, if we count a 100-foot strip, we can take the total number of ears and basically just divide it by 2, and that'll give us the bushels per acre. Now, that's assuming a half a pound of corn in an ear, but that's a pretty good estimate, and it'll get you close enough to be able to make some decisions.
Let's shift gears a little bit now and just talk about when do cattle need supplement on corn residue grazing?
Yeah, so if we don't have down corn, let's talk first about our dry, pregnant, mature cows. And to be frank, if you have dry, pregnant, mature cows that are in good condition on stock, so 5+, they do not need to be supplemented with any energy or protein. We will see no additional benefit in terms of their performance, other than the fact that if I feed them some supplemental energy or protein, I can improve their condition. So if they were in poor condition, that's a different story. But in good condition, if you're just trying to maintain them, you need to provide them a mineral and vitamin source and graze them to our recommended rate, right? So not going over that one cow for 1 month for every 100 bushels, and you should be good to go. If you are talking about young cows, so cows that are still growing, so 2, 3 year olds, then they do need supplemental protein and energy. And so really, there what we're looking for is just a couple pounds of Distillers, 2 to 3 pounds of Distillers per these young cows will actually achieve the goal of meeting their needs and make really good use of that low cost feed resource. So a lot of times, because replacement heifers also need supplemental protein and energy, a lot of times putting those young cows with your replacement heifers works out really well, because 2 to 3 pounds of Distillers is going to get you about a pound a day on like a 600, 700 pound heifer. So you can kind of like, I achieve the goal of developing my heifers, and I'm also making sure that my young cows are getting what they need, and you can run them together and make something that's pretty efficient.
You've been recently doing some research looking at also growing calves on crop residue and almost using it like a stocker option. Speak to that a bit as well. We talked about 2 pounds to get a pound a day gain on a 600, 700 pound heifer, but what about backgrounding calves, growing calves on crop residue if we're prepping them for the next year's growing season?
Yeah, so there's a lot of work that we have done with grazing stocker calves on corn residue. And in general, we can actually target a rate of gain based off of the amount of Distillers that we supplement. Now, the first thing is, some of you may be sick of me saying Distillers. So there's a reason why we talk about Distillers. So if we look at corn residue is actually pretty good with energy in terms of meeting like our cow's need. It's not quite high enough to meet a growing calf's need, but where we're really deficient in our growing calves is the protein. And in particular, growing calves have a really high protein requirement, and just providing roomly available protein like you might find in soybean meal or urea will not provide enough true protein to the calf. So what we want is we want some bypass protein. And Distillers has a lot of bypass protein in it. So the feeding value of Distillers is significantly greater than most other protein sources that we could provide, because it does have this bypass protein. In fact, we did some work years ago kind of looking at the difference in performance. And when we fed the same amount of protein and energy from a source that wasn't ruminally bypassed, so urea and corn, or even soybean meal and corn, we get about a third a pound a day gain when you feed 4 pounds of that versus feeding 3 pounds of Distillers and getting, this pound and a half. So Distillers is somewhat magical in this case. But if we feed Distillers, you can target your rate of gain. So if I want to achieve about a pound a day, then about 2 pounds of Distillers will typically get me there. If I'm looking for a pound and a half, then 4 pounds of Distillers. If I'm looking for, closer to 2 pounds, then we're somewhere around 7 pounds of Distillers. And I'm talking about dry Distillers now. If you use modified, basically double that amount, because you got to account for the water that's in there. If I'm using wet, then triple it. So the idea here is that we are providing a source of bypass protein as well as some energy. And so it's a nice little package that you can achieve the rates of gain you're looking for. And to be honest, when we're talking about stockers on stocks, it is very cost effective. And the rate of gain that we want to achieve, most of the time when we've looked at cost effectiveness, even when you're talking about retaining those calves and putting them on grass later, you really don't want to be below a pound and a half a day. The long-term economics and the short-term economics really suggest that we should be shooting for at least a pound and a half. So that would be 4 pounds of Distillers. I think with a replacement heifer, it's a different story. You may only be wanting to hit that pound, and that's fine. But on stocker calves, because you have all that fixed cost of just keeping that calf, the labor, and then thinking about even your interest on your loans, it makes more sense to distribute it over more pounds. So pound and a half seems to work really well.
You've also been doing some research looking at how harvest methods or what takes place to that corn residue when it's harvested. I'm thinking here about now we've got these rolling stalk choppers on these corn heads and basically pulverizing all that standing material, getting it on the ground. How does that impact the ability of cows or calves to select leaf and husk?
Yeah, so this was a question that Aaron, you brought up several times to me, and we finally got some funding to do a project looking at comparing in the same field stalk chopping versus not stalk chopping heads and how that impacted performance. Now, remember, we talk about at the very beginning that when we talk about corn residue grazing, the cattle are going to be selective. They're going to consume the husk and the leaf. But these stalk choppers, what we see is that they actually take apart the husk a bit, so the outer part of that husk actually gets pulled off and it's more susceptible to blowing. But also, the leaf in particular is chopped up. And so, we theorized to begin with that by having that chopping head, we were going to decrease cattle performance because we would impact their ability to select. And so, their intake would be affected. And so over 2 years, we've looked at that with growing calves, and we consistently found that our growing calves gained about a tenth of a pound a day less when we chopped versus when we did not chop. So the stalk chopper does decrease the performance of the calves, which says that it is impacting their ability to select. When we put cannulated animals out there and actually looked at what they selected in terms of the diet, the quality wasn't really significantly affected. So it seems like what's being affected is just how much they're getting per bite, and thus we're decreasing performance because they just can't get as much intake as when we have the standard head on the combine. So will that affect a cow? Yes. The way we did this was we made sure that protein wasn't limiting growth, and so energy was limiting growth. And that's what we're really focused on with the cows, getting enough energy into the cow. If we start affecting her intake, we will affect cow's performance and her ability to keep condition on.
Let's also talk about differences in types of corn. I'm thinking here about hybrids. Until recently, we've kind of been very generic about what you could expect in terms of performance, basically saying, we're going to graze to this set amount of leaf and husk out in the field based on bushel yield. Recently, you've done some research looking at different hybrids and identifying that, yes, there is indeed differences in the quality of those corn residue based on the type of hybrid that's out there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think the biggest problem here is that we have currently no way to predict the quality in the field without going and just sampling and taking samples of the husk and the leaf. But there is some huge differences. In general, I will say that lower yielding fields has higher quality husk and leaf. So that's a good thing. Like, you can figure out a little bit about what the quality you can expect based off of the yield. But even within the same yield, there's quite a bit of variability. In fact, even within the same yield, we see as much variation as we can see between low and high yielding fields. So while we can generally say there is lower yielding fields are going to be higher quality, there's enough difference in something to do with either growing conditions or variety. And I do think variety is a big part of this. We see a difference between something that's like a husk that's 55 TDN versus a husk that's 70 TDN. So huge, huge differences that we need to be aware of that cattle may not perform as well as we might think, and it might just be the residue itself. So one of the things we've been playing with is actually coming up with the ability to predict the digestibility of that husk and leaf based off of doing like a laboratory analysis. So right now, if you send in these samples to the lab, they don't really have a way to give you back an accurate number for the TDN, especially when we think about those two components. Like husk in particular has really high ADF. And the only thing you need to understand about that is ADF is typically the way we predict the energy content. and high ADF is usually associated with low digestibility. But husk doesn't work that way. Our husk is actually high ADF, but also high digestibility. So it kind of needs its own little equation to be able to look at it. And so that's one of the things we're trying to do so that you could go out and just say, okay, I'm going to sample this field. I'm going to get back a number. And then I would know if this field is high quality or low quality, and I can either adjust who I graze it with or whether I supplement.
So for folks who have corn residue to graze right now, what's your suggestion to them if they're trying to get a handle on what is the quality of the grazing out here?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a hard question, but I do think if I was to think about, what you can do right now, you can go and you can get it analyzed and you can look at what the ADF number is, but don't look at the TDN. If the ADF number is high, then we do know it's going to be lower digestibility. And in fact, I can use those numbers and actually tell you what I think the TDN is going to be. That's something that maybe actually, Aaron, I should get put out on the website so people could figure it out for themselves.
Well, I think it is a very, it's very eye-opening to me that we're seeing that kind of differences in the quality of husk. I mean, 70 to 55, that's huge if we're thinking about gains on calves or on cows. And so I think it's really eye-opening data. I think it's going to be pretty important for us as we go forward because we know right now we're seeing some variation in year to year or in performance of cattle. And we haven't always understood why. I think this is starting to maybe give us some reason to the differences we're seeing.
Yeah, in fact, on that chopping study that we were just talking about, we had the same yield in year one and year two. There was 220 bushel corn. And in year one, the husk came out in terms of the digestibility at 56. In year two, it came out to be 70. So it did have basically that variation that we were just talking about. And the calf performance was on average about 0.75 pounds per day in year one, with the same level of supplement as in year two, where they gained 2 pound a day. So 0.75 versus 2 pounds, the field yield was the same, and one of the major differences was the quality of the husk, and it was two different varieties of corn that we had planted in year one and year two. Now, admittedly, there's also weather effects and those types of things, but to me, that's a real shocker. Like, you have a 1.3 pound a day gain difference here that was just due to the quality of that husk and leaf.
Well, as I think about what we do with other forages, you and I have talked about on this podcast many times before, you got to test to know what you got. And so,
Exactly.
really, those principles apply here as we think about corn residue. I mean, it's the same thing. And just we're now just starting to get a handle on understanding the variability that there is in terms of quality of husk, in particular corn residue.
Exactly. I think before, I think we've chalked it up to some of the other variables, right? Because there are other things that affect performance of the cattle that are out there. The weather can have a huge impact on the cattle during the winter. Years ago, I was looking at some data where we were grazing oats, and the quality of the oats from year to year was very consistent, but the animal performance was very inconsistent. And one of the things I did notice was the years where we had kind of lower performance, it was years where it was actually milder winters, but we had more precipitation events. So they were actually getting their hair coats wet, right? And so we all know that wet hair is not as good at insulating. So they were using more energy to stay warm. So we didn't see as great a gains, right? So I think I've always kind of thought about it like, oh, this is the year-to-year variability in weather is the reason why we sometimes see such big differences in performance. But now I'm starting to think, yeah, there's more to just the variability in the quality of the residue itself.
Dr. Janowski, what are other things you'd encourage folks to think about to help them best get the utilization they can out of corn residue grazing?
Well, I think, I see kind of grazing management. I see some different thought processes on how people think about when is it fully utilized, right? I see kind of both ends of the spectrum. There are some people who basically move cows whenever any of the corn is gone, right? They look at the manure and they're like, as soon as I don't see grain in the manure, we're moving. That's probably too soon, right? That is too soon to make really good use out of the corn residue. If you've got a lot of corn residue and you're trying to gain some weight on your cows, that's not a bad option, right? But understanding that your cows can make use of that husk and the leaf and actually meet their needs, I think is useful. Then there's the other side, which is if there is any husk and leaf out there, then I'm not moving. In some cases, I've even seen people start really forcing them to eat stalk and cob, and that's too far, right? You can't retain animal performance that way. So I think look at it as husk and leaf is the only viable thing for them to consume out there. That's the thing you want to focus on. And pay attention, when your husk is about gone, it is time to move.
Dr. Janowski, I really appreciate your time today. Appreciate all the work you've done in researching this. I think it's been really great foundational research to help producers in this state use one of the most readily available resources we have and really added a lot of value to that. So I really, again, thanks for your time today. Thanks for sharing your research with us on the Beef Watch podcast.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Aaron, and these talks are usually really good to help me think through what's the next thing we need to do.
Well, for more information on the topic that was discussed in today's Beef Watch podcast, you can find a number of resources at the beef.unl.edu website. I'll mention one in particular. There's an extension circular 278 titled Grazing Crop Residues with Beef Cattle. This is an excellent resource if you're looking for just some of the fundamentals about grazing crop residue. You can find that online. And again, that's at beef.unl.edu.